Okay, so today what we're going to cover is about systems, and the health and safety area sort of sits in the systems area of your business. And system stands for saving you. Let's put the webcam on again as well. System stands for saving you stress, time, effort, and money. And if it's not written down, it's not a system. If it's stuck in your head, it's not a system. And we need systems so that other people can do the stuff that you do and you don't have to worry about it being done the right way all the time. And that's why now McDonald's can be run by 16-year-olds that can't even tidy their rooms up because they've got the right systems. Now, as part of the, and you guys who are members will have seen the Million Dollar Tradie Ladder before. But if you haven't, the Million Dollar Tradie Ladder is, we've identified that there's six steps that a plumbing or electrical business goes through, right from startup, right up to the top level, which we call significance or a big plumbing or electrical business doing big turnover and potentially run by management. Now, at that survival or stability level and up to the success level, sort of from the 500 up to the $2 million bracket, getting the systems right in your business is absolutely critical, particularly your on-site systems, so that you don't have to be over everything. You can be confident that your guys are doing the work the way you want it to be done. So systems are a key part of that. And if you get your systems right, you can really crush it with your business. Like Brad, which we talked to earlier, has had a great month last month, but the last year or so has been huge for him. And he's gone from being a two-man operation to being off the tools, got seven guys. His turnover's increased dramatically and on track for 1.2 million this year and at absolutely solid margins in the mid to high 30%. So he's got a very well operation now. And what he found before he got the systems in place, health and safety is part of it, but his whole operational system as well. He was forgetting jobs, forgetting invoicing. But now they've got a good management system in place, so their software. The team are confident in what he's doing and that he's got things covered. The team knows what they're doing and they're way more organized because they've got all the right checklists in place. So getting these systems is critical to getting a business that makes you good money and obviously helps you have a great lifestyle. It's not all stressful and stuck in your head. Well, like I said, Chris and Leanne from K10 Plumbing, so they've gone from feeling like slaves in their business to taking holidays and systemizing the business and refocusing the team. So they've got some of the most thorough set of checklists I've seen. They do a lot of work with builders as well, and they were having a lot of trouble with builders being disorganized. So they've got some very strong pre-job checklists. That means they've reduced the amount of repeat works and being stuffed around by their builders, and also really good quality assurance checklists to make sure that everything's covered off before they leave site, so there's no callbacks and issues like that, which have a huge impact on their margin. And that's been really critical to help them take their margin from around 30% up to 45%, which is huge, both for their cash flow and for their profit. And it's been helpful for them so they can go and get that investment property that I talked about earlier on. So guys, love to hear from you. Why is it important now for you to get the systems right in your business, and in particular to get across your health and safety system and make sure that that's all covered off? So the problem, if you don't get these systems right, and also the health and safety, obviously business is stuck in your head. So you're carrying it all around. It's very difficult to relax when you're away from work and you feel like you've been pulled from pillar to post. So by writing it down, getting it out of your head, that helps with that massively. If you're constantly fixing mistakes, you've got problems or rework or issues with the guys on the job, sometimes that is a system problem. So the right checklists, etc., are going to help solve a lot of those problems. And that concern about, hey, am I covered from a legal perspective, from a regulatory perspective, particularly with the health and safety? Have I got everything covered so that I'm not worried about leaving myself exposed? And also that my guys are safe, which is the most important thing. That's the whole reason for the health and safety. So that's the problem. So what I want to do now is I want to introduce Mark from Hazard Co. So Mark Iddiens is the National Sales Manager for Hazard Co. in the southern region. So just going to welcome Mark on board. So I'll just share the webcam and see you there, Mark.
I am indeed, Tony.
Awesome, mate. I'll put my little camera on there too. So welcome aboard, man. Good to have you on board today, and really excited that you could join us. Appreciate your time. So Mark's going to take us through the do's and don'ts of the health and safety, what we need to do to be covered, and give us some examples about what not to do as well. So, mate, I'll hand over to you. I'll just let you grab control of the screen there as well. Now, if you've got any questions through the process, through Mark's talk, then please put them in the chat box, and I'll just ask Mark, and then he's really happy to take questions. Is that cool, mate?
Yeah, no problem at all. Thanks, Tony.
Awesome. Just before we start, guys, can everyone hear and see the screen, just to make sure we're all good from the sound perspective? Awesome. Okay. Looks like we're good to go, mate. So I'll turn my camera off. If you want to turn your camera off as well, or whatever you want to do there, and just we'll get underway. All good, mate?
All good.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Tony, and welcome, everyone. And we really appreciate being a part of this webinar as well. Health and safety, as you know, is something that is very important to our businesses. I know it's not exciting, and we can't make it exciting, unfortunately, but it is something that we really need to step up and do some stuff with. It's interesting, Tony, talking about systems and a lot of very good ideas, but also remember systems, particularly in health and safety, are fantastic training tools. So if you get new people into your business and you've got processes written down or systems written down, it is fantastic for that training of that new person. So the whole thing around apprenticeships, and I'm a builder by trade, it was about 100 years ago, but when you look at people coming into the industry, there's no small business courses, and that's, I really admire you all for getting on board with Tony, because it shows that you have a desire to make sure that your business is growing, but you're very professional. And I think that's something that is very important these days, is showing that professionalism. And same goes with health and safety. If you have health and safety in place, promote it, because people are looking for companies that have proper systems in place these days, particularly if you actually contract out into larger areas. So don't be afraid to advertise that. So what I'm going to do is just go over a little bit of background on Hazard Co. And this is not a sales pitch. It's just to let you know who Hazard Co. is and how we develop. So effectively, we're a privately owned company. We've got national coverage. We've got 17 people out in the field. And we're a company with a total of 32 people. We've been 10 years in the market, so well established, got a good reputation out there as far as being able to supply the right systems, etc. We cover construction, which is our core business, agriculture, horticulture, and all farming, etc. We have professional office packs as well, and we do manufacturing businesses. We try and stick with the visual and practical side of it because, again, I'm sure a lot of you are like me. I hate paperwork. I really do. So if we can keep the paper to or paperwork to a minimum level, then we're going to help. But documentation, as you're well aware, is absolutely critical. We have over 15,000 businesses in all those four areas that are a member of Hazard Co. We believe in being easy to contact, so you deal with real people, you don't deal with answer machines, and we've got a good support network and team there. The other thing is, if you're interested in knowing a little bit more about health and safety, if you want to give us a call and have one of our people come out and talk to you, there's no pressure in that. So we are very much a company that will come in, let you know what we do, what you should be doing in health and safety. And there's no pressure or obligation at all there. So if it doesn't fit your business, no problem. If it does, brilliant. If you've already got a system, but you just want to have a look at ours, and if we say to you, well, I think your system's working okay, there's no reason to change, so we don't try and push you into changing for change's sake. If you've got a system that you're already comfortable in using, you'll continue to use that, and that'll actually work better for your business. So the Health and Safety at Work Act is the key thing that's come in on April the 4th, and this takes over from the old act that we had. One of the big things you'll find here is that there was a lot of scaremongering on this, and a lot of people wondering how much different this act was going to be. There's not a great deal of difference, particularly for smaller businesses, and when you look at subcontracting, as long as you were doing what you should have been doing in the old act, there's only a couple of subtle differences in this one. So the old act, as you know, had been in place, and health and safety has been in place in New Zealand for well over 20 years. We still get the guys that say, when it's law, I'll do it. So it has been law for over 20 years, and I know you as professionals out there will be looking at having these things in place anyway. Really, the Health and Safety at Work Act is designed to give us clearer indication of responsibilities and who has actually sort of got the duties, what we have to do, and obviously it's all there to make sure, as Tony said, that we do go home safe at night. Scaremongering, as I said, there's been a lot of scaremongering in papers with massive fines. There's been talk about jail terms. Yes, there are massive fines and there's lots of jail, you know, the jail terms sort of vary. But at the same time, if we're doing what we should be doing, we don't have an issue with that. And that's the key thing. So if you're proactive, WorkSafe with you, they are not the big bad guys with big sticks. They will educate. So they talk about the three E's. It's encourage, educate, and then enforce. So most people that we know, and most of our regular clients who have had WorkSafe on their sites, think it's been a great experience because they've actually spoken to them and educated them around things and discussed issues. There's no finger pointing or there's no blame in that. Sure, you get the stories again of people that have accidents on site and they get investigated. You also get people who have perhaps breached things that have been worked on for quite a while. So the working height thing, which has been a big issue, particularly around electricians, plumbers getting up and down ladders, etc. So those types of areas, if you're not complying with what they require there, they will take that very seriously. But most other issues, they'll work with you on that. Excuse me. So what's actually new in this new act? It talks about PCBUs. You'll hear that quite often. PCBU is really an abbreviated term for person conducting a business or an undertaking. We used to talk about principal contractors, and you'd have employees, you'd have a whole raft of people that had duties. The PCBU now is a condensed version. It's a one-off sort of a situation, I guess, where you know who's responsible. But the PCBU, you think of those as a business entity, not as a person, even though it says person conducting. A PCBU will be a person only when you're a sole trader, but if it's an actual business that employs people, it will be the business. So they are in the best position to actually make sure that health and safety is driven through the business and knowing what's required for that as well. It's about the primary duty of care they talk about, and it's about taking reasonably practicable steps now, as opposed to the old legislation which said all practicable steps, which was pretty hard to do, as you will imagine. The other thing is that you must include your workers. So small businesses, no real change because everyone's involved, but larger businesses, we need to now include our people in what we're doing. And the bottom point there, when you go to site, multiple PCBUs will be on that site at most times. So that will be the builder or the main contractor, it will be you as a subcontractor, and then there may be other subcontractors on that site. So you all have joint responsibilities as multiple PCBUs, so people or the person conducting the business or an undertaking being your business on site. The next level down, we talk about officers of that PCBU. So these are people who have direct influence in the business. So you'll look at directors, you'll look at shareholders, etc. If you have one of your people that you deem as a health and safety officer, they don't sit under this category. That's just a generic term that you've given them. So an officer has to have that influence, like I say, be a shareholder, director as well. But they have to do due diligence. So they've got to look at the business and make sure that the health and safety is actually running correctly on that business. All of these issues here, you've got to have an understanding of how everything goes together. How does your system actually work? How is it actually now driven down through the business? Have you got the proper resources, etc.? Key thing, obviously, is managing the risks. And then when we're looking at the risks for that business, as far as the hazards, what are the risks? How do we actually control them? And it's about managing those, so monitoring and reviewing them. So that's what you have as far as the responsibilities for the officers. But again, as a sole trader, you'll be the PCBU, you'll be the officer, and for the next session, you'll be looking at workers as well, and we'll go through that on the next slide after this one. And you'll also become a worker in some situations, because when you go to a site and you're contracted in by a main contractor, they have to ensure that all visitors or all contractors on their, all workers on their site are protected. And as a contractor, you fit under that worker category when you're on their site as well. What are larger businesses? We believe they've got systems in place, but we find that a lot of them are lacking. So if you've got a bigger business that you work for, make sure that you're comfortable with their health and safety systems as well, because you as a contractor going in there need to understand that they're looking after that site correctly, excuse me, and yourselves. So it's that multiple layer, I guess, of ensuring that each person has that health and safety in place. The understanding of how it works, as I said earlier, smaller PCBUs, hands-on role, so you're actively out there, so you know and understand what the hazards are on the site. But make sure, again, we go back to what Tony said earlier, we've got systems in place. So your health and safety documentation or small checklists around what you're doing and how you actually physically do that. The investigation of incidents, etc., that are termed incidents or accidents as we used to call them, are now termed events. So you'll hear people talking around event management. Officers that don't actually go out to site or don't get involved in health and safety are not taking reasonably practical steps, and therefore you're not understanding what the requirements are. So please make sure you're involved in your health and safety systems. With workers, again, one of the big things, and I'm sure you'll get frustrated with that if you employ people, is that employees, as we used to call them, but workers now, always think it's the business responsibility to run health and safety and ensure that it's actually done. But it's in fact everybody's responsibility. And that's one of the big issues around this new legislation, is it does put responsibility to everybody, regardless of where you sit in the business. So they must ensure that they take care of their own health and safety. You can't, so what they talk about is no action or inaction, so nothing you do or don't do can create harm for anybody else. So they have to be aware of that issue as well. So they can't knowingly do something that's dangerous or unsafe, which will then perhaps jeopardize somebody else on that site. They have to cooperate with some of the policies, procedures you've got in place. And the other thing is that often they'll actually talk about, you know, it's not my responsibility, why should I be worried about it? Or you say to them, again, below where we say reasonable instruction, you're asking them to wear personal protective equipment or PPE, and they're not doing that. If you've given them instruction and you've also given them the personal protective equipment, they need to wear that. So that's the thing that you have to take into consideration now, is how do you actually manage that? One of the big things we get from WorkSafe is that they go on sites and there's a guy my age group or older, and they say, I'm not wearing personal protective equipment or as far as hearing protection because I'm already deaf. And the owner of the business will say, well, I've told them 100 times, what do I do? So WorkSafe will say, well, show me a process. If you've told them 100 times, do you have it documented that you've actually gone through a process with them? And you have to go down that disciplinary procedure area. I know it's not a place we want to go, but if you don't, it comes back to you as a business owner. So be aware that if you're giving lawful instruction around health and safety and they're not complying, you need to document those things down and make sure they're on the job file. But if it continues, you have to seriously look at what you do with that employee or worker, as they're termed now. So as far as the differences for contractors, is there, or subcontractors, is there a big difference, and what does it really mean for you? So when we look at businesses at themselves, you'll look at the directors have more influence, and that's why the PCBU has all that the responsibilities and around offices. So they figure that you can drive the health and safety down through your business. Communicate, cooperate on that second point, and coordinate. This is the key thing when we talked earlier about the multiple PCBUs on site being principal builder, yourselves and other contractors perhaps on the site. Now we have to ensure that there's communication between all parties. Who's doing what? And if you're doing it in the same area that I am, what are the issues to me and my workers on that site? So it's now about actually stopping, talking about it, and even if you document a small sort of like a thing in your diary or the principal PCBU, if they're there on the site, they should be leading this. If not, you'll communicate with, you know, plumbers will communicate with electricians or drain layers or whoever else is on the site, just to make sure that you understand where the hazards are. Trenches here, I'll be working at height in this area here. I'm going to be digging up something over there. So making sure that everybody knows what's happening. Everyone has to be involved in that, third point down there. So we all need to ensure that we're understanding and cooperating on that site. Effective practices that engage workers, we're talking about, you must make sure, as I said earlier, that all workers are engaged on that site. Everybody has a say in health and safety. If you're a larger company and you've got over 20 people, then you'd probably look at having health and safety reps, and they will be the people that will go to those meetings. They'll then communicate that back to other workers. If it's a small business and you're all involved in that, then you'll be talking about this regardless anyway, each week. Remember that even if you're driving off to work in a van in the morning, if you're talking about the job, that's a toolbox talk, that's a startup meeting. Document that just bullet point in a diary or on a form, and you've got your toolbox talk done whilst you're driving off to the site. So it doesn't have to be difficult in doing this stuff. Health and safety, as far as just being open-minded about it, and I think we've been very closed-minded in the past, but we need to now say, well, okay, we have to do this stuff. But we get back to the systems that Tony talked about earlier as well. When you're putting health and safety in place, you'll find often it does impact on quality. It'll also impact on efficiencies. So often a lot of this stuff, if you're putting it in place, will help in those areas. Not all of it, I understand that, but some of it will. So it's not all just about health and safety.
So Mark, this is obviously a really important area. Guys, if you've got any questions around that relationship between the different contractors, head contractor on site, sometimes you might be a head contractor, particularly if your plumber's doing bathrooms and that sort of thing. So if you've got any questions for Mark around that area or any specific examples that you've struggled with and quite, you know, don't quite know where the lines are, then just chuck your question in the chat box and I can shoot them through to Mark. So yeah, please ask any questions that you've got.
Cool. So where do we start? And I suppose, you know, there's a number of things, and like everything when it's paper-based, to do the right thing, you'd have about 300 forms. We're not going to be looking at trying to implement things like that. What we need to do is say, well, okay, what are the basic things that we have to do? And let's get the guts, I guess, of a system in place. and make sure that we're doing those things really, really well, and then we can expand and build from there. But the whole thing around health and safety is about making sure we're doing the key things and we're doing them really well and people understand those. So it's the systems and procedures, and as I said, hazards we used to talk about, but it's the risks associated with those hazards that we need to now manage, and how do we actually get those out, understand them, and then what do we do to take action around the risks in that. So the second point there, when it says take action, what we're saying is let's actually live health and safety, let's do it on the site, but prove it. And that's where the documentation comes into place. A lot of people we find, they've got health and safety, they've had it for years. We say, oh great, can you show us? And they pull out this manual and a whole raft of dust comes off it and they haven't used it for ages. The other thing is, with the new legislation that came in on April the 4th this year, you must have an updated health and safety policy and procedures or plan or manual or whatever it's deemed to be with the one that you have, because if it's not dated or hasn't been updated since the new legislation, it'll be well out of date. So if you've got a person involved in your health and safety or you're doing it yourself, make sure that you go back through and look at what's required to be changed in your policy or procedures, etc. Health and safety is about being consistent, and it becomes habit forming. We get a lot of people who do things every 6 months, but it should be ongoing. If you look at small communication documents and things like that, our toolbox talks and site reviews done on a regular basis, and then some of the other things that sit in behind that. But it must be part of your daily, weekly, monthly business plan as far as what you're doing out on site. It is about involving everyone, as we talked about before, and you'll know best how to engage your workers. It's the most difficult thing. The other difficult thing is, if you flip that around, you being contractors, subcontractors, flip that around and think how difficult it is for that principal PCBU or the main contractor on the site when he asks businesses for health and safety documentation, or if you've got systems in place and you don't give them anything or you don't have it. He has multiple people that they have to actually go to and try and get this information from. They have to engage all of you as subcontractors or contractors in this whole process. You've got your employees or workers, as we term them now, that you have to engage, and that's a difficult job in itself. But think about if you had to do that with contractors as well. So everybody needs to help everyone else. You get a lot of theory people, and particularly people in larger organizations who say, if your subcontractors or contractors don't give you this stuff, just go to somebody else and get somebody else. What we look at there is it's not really practical, because if you have a really good relationship with somebody, and you know they're reliable and they do good work, why would you get rid of them? Why wouldn't you work together and help them to do this stuff? So if you're struggling with it as well, and you work for some main contractors that you know really well or enjoy working with, ask them if they can help. So there's a lot of different ways we can do this without having to be out there by ourselves trying to get together systems or processes that we're not too sure what we require. The
so
guidelines...
Sorry, Mark, I've just got a question here, mate, from Danica. Danica, I might just unmute you. Can you hear me, Danica? Have you got a microphone there?
Yes.
Awesome. Do you want to ask Mark your question, Danica?
Oh, yeah. We just provide a couple of guys as labour only to a main contractor. And I'm just wondering, do our guys come under their site-specific safety plan? Or should we have our own guys on that site?
Okay, if they are labour only, so effectively you're saying that you're not paying them, but that main contractor's paying them?
Yes.
Okay, if that main contractor is paying them, then they sit under their health, that main contractor's health and safety. So they effectively become a worker for that main contractor. So what you would do is to perhaps put some form of contract in place to say to the main contractor that when we give you this person, we need to ensure that you will, and different things from your contract, but part of that will be that they will ensure their health and safety on the site and include them under their own, which legally they have to do anyway.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
That answer that.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark. I'll just, sorry, Mark, carry on.
Cool. Thank you. Yep. So that second to last point here, when we talk about guidelines and regulations, etc., if you go to WorkSafe's website, and it is a little bit difficult to navigate around, but you can search for guidelines. You need to have an understanding of any business or activity that actually is included in your activities as well, or if you engaged other contractors yourself, or work with them often, you need to understand some of the risks around those areas. So that would be, you see here we've got MEWPs, which is Mobile Elevated Work Platforms, so scissor hoists, cherry pickers and those sorts of things. Probably you're very aware now that you need to be trained in the operation of those, but there are guidelines around. So if you use those as an electrician, maybe as a plumber now, and again as well, then you should have the guidelines around that. You should also have the working at heights guidelines, because again, you're working at heights, and if you go on roofs to put through pipes and flashings, etc., again it's the roofs. So it's just understanding what's required for your business and what you actually do and what the guidelines are around that. So make sure that you have that on site. Main contractors, if you look at, if you're bringing other people in, if you've got cranes on site, etc., you should have a basic understanding of the safety required around craneage and that type of thing. We're not experts in it, but we need to know the basics. Same with scaffolding companies. If you're engaging scaffolding companies, you should have some systems in place to do basic checks on scaffolding. Paperwork is an interesting one, isn't it? You know, you look at some of those advertisements on TV and you look at the WorkSafe website and they say that you don't need a lot of paperwork. The fact of the matter is, if something goes wrong, what do they ask for? They ask for proof, and the only way you can prove you're doing something or you have systems is to have them documented down. So again, it comes back to those systems, comes back to processes, comes back to documents. You don't need big stories though, you can bullet point stuff. You can also write stuff in your diary, that's adequate as well. But for high risk activities, always make sure you've got something documented. So if we look at actions and where we probably need to go from this, it's about addressing the risks, but looking a step back, I guess, leadership is absolutely critical. If we look at how health and safety is implemented, we learn very visually, a lot of us in trades, but when we're doing stuff, and it's a bit like bringing up a family, they'll watch your actions and they'll mirror them, and your workers will be exactly the same. If you're going past a site that's dangerous and you do nothing about it, they'll do exactly the same, because if it's good enough for you, it's good enough for them. And I just can't emphasize that enough. It's leadership is really, really critical in this. Step up to it, take it by the horns, and really lead by example. Give a good, clear framework around direction as well. Excuse me. And if we can do that and get that in place, then the rest of the stuff should just flow very nicely. So when we look at these actions, it's about making sure everybody in your business really understands what's required of them. And you can do that through a worker induction. If you have a checklist, and again it comes back to those checklists, what are some of the things that we need to take a worker through? When you employ somebody, you may have an induction program which you take them through, but again, workers that have been with us for a regular or a certain amount of time, so if they're long-serving workers that have been with us for a number of years, we should be re-inducting them around health and safety issues every 12 months, just to make sure we're anything that changes they're aware of, giving them a bit of an update. And that's around some of the basic things like, you know, what PPE to wear, and what they need to do as far as where the policy and procedures is, what the system is, how to induct people to site, those types of things. And just go through that process, document that down. The training, again, in the new legislation, it's mentioned about 6 times. In the old legislation, it was only mentioned a couple of times. So training's absolutely critical. If you've got people that come into your business, new workers, and they've got 20 years experience in the business, you still need to assess them when they're using dangerous equipment to make sure you deem them competent, because they could have bad habits, or they may not have used that piece of equipment before, but you've still got to have some way of assessing that. With apprentices, we know they go through regular training, but again, make sure that their training's up to date and you've got copies of it, you're supervising them as well. Engage new employees or workers. Don't ever send them straight off to a job by themselves without first putting them with somebody that you know is experienced in your business to assess their capabilities. Because again, you don't know whether they've told you the truth or not when they've actually come into your business and said they've got 30 years experience. The formally identifying risks and hazards, all of those high risk tasks, so we think about those high risk tasks, and for you it would be heavy machinery, so for your drain layers out there, working for electricians, it's obviously live power is the big one. Plumbers, it would be working at height stuff, etc. So you must have a task analysis. We talk here, well, SSSPs, which is site-specific safety plan. Some of the bigger companies will use that. Some other large companies that contribute ask for those. Site-specific safety plans, for those that are not used to them, are really the communication document for the job, I guess. Who's in charge, what some of the hazards are, what are the controls, who the first aiders are, whether you've got processes in place for identifying certain things, etc., how often you're going to have toolbox talks and do site reviews or checklists. TAs, which is a task analysis, which will just give you the hazards and the controls for the task you're doing. JSA, the next one, is job safety analysis, so similar to TAs, as are safe working method statements, which is the next one there. So those three, TA, JSA, and SWMS, are pretty much similar types of documents, which will actually step out the actual steps that you're doing, and then it will actually give you a list of, or you'll put down a list of hazards, and then a list of controls. Everybody that's undertaking that task will then sign off, will read through that, make sure they're comfortable. You all agree that, yes, that's the safest method, then you sign off on it. So effectively, it becomes your training document, but it's also, yes, we've actually taken time and assessed the risk around this high-risk task, and we're comfortable this is the way to do it, and make sure you follow it through. Hazard registers, the last one there, obviously you'll be used to those. It's about assessing or listing the hazards related to the work that you often do, and then the risk controls around that as well. When we talk the third point down about reviewing workplaces, you should have a wee checklist that relates to what you do. So in your business, it could be that you obviously you'll have plant equipment or different tools, etc. on that. You'll list out your electrical tools, you'll list out or just have electrical tools, you'll have ladders, you'll have maybe excavations, obviously being drain layers, plumbers, electricians, you'll have maybe something around working at heights, but you'll have certain lists of stuff that you'll check on a regular basis. Your van may be one of them as well, checking out your vehicles if you don't have a monthly checklist. But you do that weekly, and you might do 3 jobs a day and small jobs during that day. So what we say is do a site review and a toolbox talk on maybe the first job you go to on the Monday morning, or you could say every Wednesday morning, whatever job we're on, that's where we're going to do a a toolbox talk and a little site review checklist, which checks some of our gear and a little bit of our behavior. If you go to another job that's very high risk, then you may do a separate toolbox talk on that one, but at least try and get an 8-weekly site review and a toolbox talk. The toolbox talks are your communication document, that fourth point down, with your people, and it's just going through any of the findings from the review. So I'll give you really a good example of this is there was, I think, a few weeks ago, a prosecution that came out from WorkSafe, and it was for a guy falling off a ladder up north, and the company was prosecuted $63,000. Now, straight away, you think, man, that's a lot of money for a fall off a ladder. To me, that triggers the thought that there's got to be more to it. When you read through that, the ladder the guy was using had the rubber feet completely worn off it, so it was actually metal on concrete. When the guy fell, he's fallen and he's hit his head and he's got brain damage and he's no longer able to work. So that's a pretty severe consequence for falling off a ladder. And then when they reviewed that, they saw that they'd actually done checklists and the builder knew about the rubbers on the feet, or somebody had told them if they didn't do checklists and they hadn't replaced it, they hadn't taken it off site. So I just can't stress enough, when you're doing these site reviews, if you're checking your equipment, your tools or your behavior and something's wrong, when you do your toolbox talk, jot down who's actually going to be responsible for taking that off the site, and jot down that we're going to actually remove a piece of equipment from site. Get rid of it, put a note on it if it's still there on site, but make sure it's clearly noted, and then get it off site as quickly as possible. But action the things that you need to action as far as completing something or making something safe again. Because if it does create an incident, you're going to be in the gun a heck of a lot more than if you've actually taken it out of action and somebody's gone and picked it up, but it's still got a tag on it or something. So I just can't stress that enough. If something's brought up in these meetings, as far as your toolbox meetings or your site review, address it quickly, document who's going to address it, and put your findings down. So that bottom point there, don't ignore it, get into it quickly, because it won't go away and it'll bite. Okay, so I think pretty much commitment from the business is what we look to. It's about leadership, but it's about now having an active system on your site. Responsibilities start with you as the owner of the business, and then obviously everybody now needs to run with that too. So again, it's about training people. It's about having them understand responsibilities, clearly documenting processes, but reviewing it on a regular basis. Health and safety has to be active. We get a lot of people that have got forms or they've got systems, but they don't use them. It must be active. That's the only way it will help you. The only thing with this, when it does help, obviously it'll minimize the exposure and the risk. Insurances, a lot of people talk about those. There is no insurance against the prosecution from WorkSafe. There is, however, the ability to insure yourselves against the prosecution as far as the defense of the prosecution and any reparation that might be paid to the victim. But the actual fine from WorkSafe, which is the bulk of the fines that you see with these things happening, is not something that is able to be insured against. So make sure you've got a system in place to protect you. It's not scary. If you're doing the right things, as I said earlier, WorkSafe are really good at working with you. So they're also very approachable. If you are brave enough to say, well, okay, I'm going to get them into my business to check what I'm doing and get them to give me some advice, by all means, they're very, very happy to do that. Just bear in mind, if there's some things that need fixing fairly quickly, they'll ask you to do that and they'll probably pop back, but they don't put a lot of pressure on you, providing it's not high risk or something that needs immediate action on that. Okay, so that's pretty much us going through that. Is there anything that anybody wants me to go back through before? I'll just give you a brief overview of what we can help with if you want us to be involved. But are there any other questions out there that you'd like to ask me? So
Timothy's just asked, do you have a sole trader package?
Yes, we do. Very much, I suppose I'll just pop on to what we can or what we offer with our systems, and we have various systems that work, but we have systems that will do any business, no matter what size. But our core business when we started off in health and safety is really that 1 to 10 man band, so we're very, very much focused on smaller businesses as well as very large businesses now that we address. So our small packages, if you want to give me a call, I'm more than happy to talk you through what the costs of those are. I think most people are very surprised, and if Tony's in agreement, I can certainly tell you those now. But the, yeah, like I say,
you're welcome to if you're happy with it.
Yep. Look, we're most businesses, our annual fee, there's a membership fee with $390 plus GST. For that, you get our policy and procedures, so we write that for your business. You also get us on an 0800 number, which gives you direct access to our technical team, as you can see on that slide, during work hours. And if you have any incidents, which we term events now, it's a 24/7 emergency helpline as well. So that's, you can call us as many times as you like about any questions on health and safety, and it's all part of your membership.
It's just good to know you've got someone backing you up, I guess, is the key thing as well.
Very much so. And that's what we find, is that the majority of our clients, if they have to use that support mechanism, or particularly with the emergency phone line through for accidents or incidents, they just think it's fantastic because it takes a lot of that pressure off. We can advise when you need to, what you need to do, as far as we'll send you the forms, we'll check those out with you, make sure they're done, but we'll advise you when you phone us whether it has to be alerted to WorkSafe, because remember that a lot of those events also need to be alerted to them, and if you don't, you can be in a lot of trouble, but we can advise you on that too.
Sorry mate, we've got a few other questions here as well, so we'll get onto those in a sec.
Sure, sorry, I'll just say, and with sole traders or small businesses, again, it's just getting a small team pack, we call it, which is a portable hazard board, and also it has a kit with resources like flash cards, flip cards on hazards and controls, risk controls, etc., and those are $140, but they're a one-off cost. So if you've got two teams, you'd buy two of those. If you've only got one team, you'd only buy one. But the $390 for the membership plus GST is a very, very realistic and cost-effective price.
That's fantastic. So David's got a question. How do we deal with schools requesting 1 day a week work experience for kids?
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting one, because volunteers also fall under workers, which means that you have overriding responsibility for their health and safety on the site. So when you take those people on, you have to make sure they are not doing anything that's of high risk and that you're supervising them at all times. So, you know, when you want
to... Basically the same rule for them.
It's exactly, you've got to treat them exactly as you would a worker. So they have to be trained properly or supervised.
Okay. And Andy's asked, if we go onto a SiteSafe site, if we are with HazardCo, are we compliant? Or do we have to go through SiteSafe training as well?
Yeah, look, Andy, interesting point. Compliant, I would say, is a very broad term. So, no, unless you've got an active system, which we would check as far as compliant, but you're probably talking about the SiteSafe passport, training passport I'm picking. And some of them will allow a HazardCo training license, which you get as part of your membership with HazardCo anyway. Others will actually say, no, we specifically want SiteSafe passport. So if you're a HazardCo member, you don't need to join SiteSafe for argument's sake. You just go along and do that training if they ask you to do it. But we're happy to go into bat for you if they want to know a bit more about what the HazardCo license is. Happy to call.
Sure. So Mike and Tracy got a question. So if older workers are rebelling against health and safety, do we have to go down the route of discipline, as we have some guys who started work when there was no health and safety?
Yeah, and again, it's something that comes up very, very often, and you all know this. Yes, unfortunately, you do have to put some pressure on them, because if they don't do health and safety, they are jeopardising your business, and it's you that's going to get the fine or the prosecution, or have the incident on your site, which will lead to a WorkSafe, perhaps a WorkSafe investigation. So, yeah, unfortunately, you've got to figure out a way to manage them, and if they don't do it, if the only option is to discipline them, then I would suggest that's what you need to do. Yep. Cool. But it's again trying to, how do they help you run your business properly, and knowing that they're jeopardising your business.
So Jenny's just said, we use the packs from Hazardco, which are great visuals for the guys, so that's awesome. So I think that's all the questions we've got, mate, so if you want to just pick up there, yep.
Okay, cool. So, look, again, I reinforce, if you want to find out a little bit more about what we do, we're more than happy. If you call Tony will put some details up, give me a call, I'll put my number on that, and I'll organise for a person in the area that you're at to come out and talk to you. Again, I reinforce, there's no obligation, there's no pressure at all to have our system, more than happy just to talk to you. But it's about all of these things here we can supply with the training. Regular updates, I think, are really critical these days as well, but understanding, but having that access to our tech team and the emergency line, having those visual documents and visual tools as far as the flip cards, etc. But the system has to be active, so there are things you have to do, but there are some smarter ways we can do it so that there's not as much work involved as well.
Awesome, guys. So that's great. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate that a lot. So as Mark said, systems are the key thing, both for your health and safety. And systems allow you to prove that you've got the documentation done, and checklists, and as you guys who are members of the program know, there's a bunch of great checklists in the membership site, not only for in regards to health and safety, but your pre-job checklists to make sure that the jobs are ready for you when you get there and you're not being mucked around by your contractors, and your quality assurance checklists as well, so that when your jobs are finished, you can go through and make sure all the individual tasks are finished, are taken care of, and that it's all covered so that the job's going to run smoothly. And if you get this stuff right, get the systems right, it's going to have massive impact on your business, like Stuart from Alpha Plumbing. So Stuart had been in business for about 35 years. Business has gone okay, but he knew he could do a bit better. So he joined the program, systemized his business, got his management system working, his checklists working, hired a couple of extra tradesmen, and by putting the systems in place, it's really allowed him to grow his margin quite strongly, because it's increased the productivity of his guys and also his pricing system, which has grown his gross profit by $12,600 a month. And Stuart now has a succession plan in place for his business, because he's got all the systems set up so that some other people can come in and help him run the business, and he can potentially sell it as well. So those systems are going to help tremendously with growing your business, helping you make some more profit out of the business, but also most importantly getting your time and the stress levels under control. So next steps are the bunch of systems resources in the membership site. If you're a member of the program, just jump in there and check those out. If you're not a member of the program and you want to find out a little bit more about how it works and whether it's something that would be good for your business, then we have 5 free tradie strategy sessions available this month. We've only got 5, we're pretty flat out. They're valued at $495. The way it works is, what we'll do is we'll figure out how you want your business to look in 90 days, 12 months, and 3 years, what sort of profit you want to make, how you want the team to be set up, and how many hours a week and what sort of lifestyle you're looking to achieve. Then we'll work out a step-by-step plan for exactly how to get you there. And we'll go through at least 9 strategies that you can use to systemize your business and increase your profits and win more work as well, and also look at understanding how much extra money you could make in the next 12 months by putting those strategies in place. Plus, as Mark said, you can get a free 45-minute Hazardco consultation to see where you're at and what you might need to do to make sure that you're compliant. Now, if you would like to secure one of those sessions, all you need to do is go to www.profitabletradie.com. And I'll just actually flick that into the chat box there, so the web link is there, www.profitabletradie.com/2016. You'll be given the option to choose a 15-minute phone call with myself. So the way the process will work is just choose a 15-minute phone call, time that works for you, in my calendar. I'll give you a call. We'll figure out how your business is going, what's the challenges you've got at the moment. I'll figure out if or how I can help, and if we can, then we can book in that 90-minute strategy session. If I can't, I'll let you know and try and point you in the right direction. And if it's a good fit, then we'll go on and have that strategy session. So the page looks like that. If you click the link in the chat box, it'll take you there as well. Okay, so big thanks to everyone today. And any questions? We'll just if you've got any other questions for myself or Mark, then I'm going to ask them now. I'll just bring Mark back on. Okay, Mark, so I have another question from Eugene. We have to wear steel tip boots for work, but we're required to take them off when going into a house. What safety is in that?
Yeah, Neil, that's a really interesting
Eugene.
It is a really interesting one, and no, you should not be taking them off. Steel cap boots are there for, they're a mandatory part of personal protective equipment. And I know that when you go into new houses particularly, people don't want you clomping in and around there on vinyl, etc., with stones in the bottom of your boots. So you may have to have a separate pair for interior use. But you'll notice there's a lot of white.
Boot covers are a good idea as well.
But unfortunately, if you've got stones in the bottom of your boots, they'll still come through and gouge out the vinyl or mark the vinyl through the boot covers. That's one of the issues we get. But if you look to what white wear companies are doing now, they used to take their boots off and bring the white wear into your building or even bed deliveries, but now they won't. They'll leave it at your front door if you insist on them taking their shoes off. And we have to get the same, because if something happens and you have damaged feet from something dropping on it, you are the guys that haven't worn your personal protective equipment, and you'll be the ones that get it.
Awesome. Okay, thank you for that. So any other questions, guys? Okay. Regarding working at heights, what is a reasonable amount of time that you should work, that you could work with a harness before you need edge protection?
Yeah, look, again, working at height stuff, I was hoping I'd get away without sort of having a question on this, but working at height stuff is very much a speculative thing, I guess, with a lot of people. But harnesses are last point of call, I guess, as far as personal protective equipment goes. So they looked first, can you eliminate it, which we can't do, but can you isolate it, which is edge protection or some form of fall protection like a scissor hoist, cherry picker, etc. Harness is, if you look at the working at heights graphs, for the hierarchy of controls, is the very bottom one. So it's the least acceptable situation. Working at heights, harness work, you would probably want to do short-term duration, so a quick repair of a flashing, of putting something around a chimney or whatever. But you have to be trained to a certain NZQA standards to wear them as well, so just be aware of that fact.
Awesome. Kirsty did write after that, sorry for asking the question. Okay, cool. That's awesome, guys. Hey, Mark, really appreciate your time today, mate. Great to have you on board. A few lessons for me was you've got to document stuff so that you can prove that you're taking this seriously. Leadership is the key, like anything in life. They'll do what you do, not what you say. And common sense as well is a big part of it, because we actually want guys to come home safe. So using your common sense is pretty important. Joe's got a question. What is the expectation in terms of monitoring workers' health? Do you need to set up regular medical checkups, or is it to suffice just to check in with your workers at the toolbox meetings? Interesting question.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. Monitoring of health is now something we have to do legally under the new Act, and monitoring of health is based around anything you use personal protective equipment to minimise the exposure with. So hearing, respiratory, if you're using dust masks, etc., you would have to now monitor each year and do hearing tests and respiratory tests as well.
Okay. What about mental health? Because that's something a lot of our members get frustrated about. You know, I'm stressed out. They're workers. You're putting too much pressure on me and all that sort of thing. How does that fit in with all of this?
Yeah, look, stress and fatigue is something that is a very much, because one of the big things about the new legislation is it now talks about the well-being side. We've always talked about the safety, the physical aspect of safety, but we haven't talked about the mental aspect of it. So this well-being is a big part of the new legislation. It's a very open to interpretation, though, isn't it? You know, stress levels do vary from person to person, and it's a very difficult thing to read. So a lot of the, there's some information on the websites, the WorkSafe website around stress, but again, I guess that's up to personal interpretation from your doctors. If they're stressed, they should go along and get somebody, but if you send them to their doctor, then they're likely to just give them time off. So you've got to have somebody maybe that you can use, but there's no hard and fast rule on that one. But there's a lot of information around fatigue, but stress is one that is very ambiguous.
Okay, awesome. Okay, well, look, appreciate your time again, Mark. Fantastic to have you on the session this morning. And we'll blast out an email with Mark's contact details as well. If you want to secure one of those free strategy sessions, then jump on and reserve that now. But awesome to be with you guys this morning. And yeah, look, guys, have a great weekend, and we look forward to catching up with you for your 15-minute phone calls next week, and there'll be a question and answer webinar the week after that. If you haven't booked in or reserved the date for the one-day boot camp in Wellington on the 2nd of September, make sure you lock that in your diary, because there's going to be a great session as well. Guys, have a great weekend, and I really look forward to talking to you again next time. Cheers, guys.